Blast you, Xavier. I never believed in your dreams, your morals, your ideas. But you did. And so did my parents.
I told you, Familia. I told you this episode was going to make you cry. What is going on, Familia? Dayspring here with an episode of Power of X-Men to discuss episode 3 of X-Men 97, Fire Made Flesh. Now, listen, if you haven't seen this episode, this is going to be a spoiler discussion. And if you subscribe to the podcast and this just automatically started playing, which is something that quite a few people told me happens because we drop a lot of episodes, hit pause now. Go watch episode 3, Fire Made Flesh of X-Men 97, because it's a really big episode. So much happens. And we are going to do a very quick first impression, first review, and then we'll thoroughly break it down with the boys, with Sean, with Luigi, and Flink on our next episode. But I wanted to discuss this. I woke up at 3 o'clock to watch this, specifically maybe like 1:45. I woke up and I was like, oh, I gotta get ready. Had to like mosey my way downstairs to watch this episode. And you, Familia, this is why we do the things we do here at Power of X-Men, because the X-Men are a household name again. Of course, I want to wake up at 3 a.m. like I did for WandaVision. Wake up at 3 a.m. and watch these episodes. Now, of course, we were just getting our footing when we were doing podcasting during WandaVision. So we didn't know that. I didn't know that you should release these episodes, you know, day of. I'd be like, oh, wait a few days. No. We are discussing this as it happens, because the X-Men are back, baby. And this was a reaction that I'm seeing online, this reaction we're seeing with everyone. This was the reaction I wish we had gotten for the Marvels with Beast in that post-credit scene. Okay, Familia, your final spoiler warning, 3, 2, 1. They did Inferno, baby. Oh, we have Inferno finally in animated form. Now, it is Inferno light. This is like fast food Inferno. And this is an episode that I feel could have been a two-parter. And I remember what I was talking about in, if you remember what I was talking about in previous episodes, I said I thought there was an issue with pacing. Now, I don't really think that anymore, certainly not with the first two episodes, but you can understand that within the context of watching these three episodes at the premiere back to back, a little drunk with Luigi. Again, thank you, Luigi, so much for taking me to the premiere. But seeing these three episodes very, very tipsy at an event where there was so much energy, I mean, you know, you would have thought like, oh, there was a lot of pacing, you know, issues here, because so much happens within this hour and a half. Now, I will say that I think the first two episodes are perfect in terms of pacing. This episode, it's not that I think the pacing is bad, but I think there was enough in the source material to constitute a two-parter. How about that? I think the bar was set high for Inferno because everyone wanted to see Manhattan engulfed by the Inferno, right? And, you know, it's funny. There was, well, it was it in the Daredevil comic of Inferno where there's a bunch of people commuting on a bus to hell and they basically just live to work. I believe that was Ann Nesenti's issue. I'm a New Yorker for 2 decades, pre-pandemic. I took that subway every day. You lived it for your commute, right? To your office. It's a much different world now, obviously, with working remotely and stuff like that. But commuting in Manhattan, that was a big thing. But anyways, I think a lot of people truly wanted to see the Inferno of the comics. Now, that was never going to happen, because when you look at the original series, they streamlined these larger-than-life stories, right? The biggest example being Days of Future Past, right? What happens in Days of Future Past, the comic, is very different of Days of Future Past here in the animated series. So similarly with Inferno, I understand why they did those changes. And let me tell you, Bo made sure that he gave as many callbacks and was as faithful as he can be adapting this for the series. That's the entire point of the series, is to adapt these stories. So And this way, this interpretation of Fernal lines up perfectly with the original animated series, right? I have a feeling that people are going to be sliding into DMs and being like, oh, I wish they had done like Inferno proper. They didn't respect the source material. But to which I will say, go back to the original series, and they adapted all of these stories. They adapted all of these characters. Not everything happens verbatim in these. And by the way, you want to make sure a lot of this stuff gets adapted. We've talked about this on the podcast before, when you adapt something panel for panel, like they did with The Killing Joke. The Killing Joke had a separate intro, but once we finally got into the actual story of The Killing Joke, you adapted it panel for panel. It doesn't always translate. Sailor Moon Crystal adapted the manga panel for panel up until Cosmos. And it doesn't work when you adapt it like that, because it's meant to be consumed in a comic book medium. So when you translate it to TV, you have to make adjustments to the story because pacing can be very different. This story is light years better than the original. And it is a story of trauma, of rising above abuse. It's gorgeous. And Maddie finally has her own agency. So quick broad strokes here. The gene that gave birth to Nathan is actually Madeline Pryor. And I saw a couple of people in the comments arguing with me about this, being like, no, no, no. The woman who showed up at the door, that gene, that's Madeline. I was like, no, it's not. It's going to be, it was so clearly Maddie at the end. The way they drew her with the Paul Smith hair and her like angry eyebrows, like that was Madeline Pryor. If you had any, I thought it was so obvious. I mean, obviously I had seen this episode, so I knew beforehand, but I wouldn't have said anything. Even if I hadn't seen this episode, I would have been like, oh, that ending, clearly it's Madeline. When they zoom in on clone Jean, or Jean that gave birth to Nathan, when they zoom in on her face, she has Paul Smith hair. She has like the very angry eyebrows. I was like, that is Madeline. She quite literally morphed from Jean to Madeline. It's so funny. It's like, we can tell the difference between Gene and Maddie. I wonder if I should put something like that up on the podcast. Be like, do a little quiz and be like, can you tell the difference between Gene and Maddie? I did that with Courtney Ross and Emma. And it's funny, we know the difference. Emma and Courtney Ross look identical. They're blonde hair, beautiful women who wear white. And yet we can tell the difference. Similarly with Gene and Maddie, I can tell the difference between Gene and Maddie. So we find out that the Jean who came in and is being treated by Beast, because she's passed out, she doesn't have any memories, yet she is the appropriate age for Jean, while the Jean that gave birth to baby Nathan, who we're going to refer to as Maddie now, because at the end of the episode, she calls herself Madeline Pryor. So Maddie finds out that she has sinister DNA in her and that she's a clone. And the entire point of this was because Sinister wanted baby Cable, wanted an offspring. Now, that's a lot of work for what happened. I don't know why you wouldn't just wait for Jean and Cyclops to naturally have kids. I mean, they were well on their way. I don't know why you had to create a clone specifically to give birth and then activate the clone and have the clone bring in the baby. It seems like a lot of trouble. Like maybe you could have just snuck into the mansion in the middle of the night and kidnapped baby Cable, you know, after he was born. But Sinister had at one point in X-Men history, swapped out Jean for Maddie. Now, when did the swap occur? This is going to be a large debate amongst fans. But I'm telling you here, Familia, it's not a debate. There are going to be people out there who debate and all that stuff. There is absolutely no debate about it. Jean was switched out during Beyond Good and Evil. Okay? It makes the most sense because till death do us part, we see that Sinister gets DNA from Cyclops and Jean, right? And when is the next time Sinister has Jean? Well, it's in Beyond Good and Evil. And at the end of Beyond Good and Evil, she and Cyclops are reunited. Now, season 5 picks up and Jean is wearing her hair down. And in this episode, our Jean, when she is ready to go back into battle, she puts her hair back in a ponytail, signaling to us that this is supposed to be the real Jean. So right off the bat, there you go. This is why Jean at the beginning of season 5 started wearing her hair down and not in a ponytail, because that was Maddie. So season 5, Jean is Maddie. and they were swapped out in Beyond Good and Evil. That's it. There's no debate on this, Familia. That's it. And that way, you still preserve that it was Jean who was the Phoenix. All that history is still preserved. And season five, you just say it was Maddie. And that's it. So I'm very curious to see how many people are going to argue otherwise. It's not going to make sense that she got swapped out in season two. It's not going to make sense that it was the Fae Lynx, because Sinister had his hands full when they were doing the Fae Lynx Covenant. Absolutely not that. Jean was swapped out during Beyond Good and Evil. End of story. I will die on this hill. I know I'm right. So, I've thought about it long and hard. I've had a lot of time to think about this, and that's the way it lines up. And I'm pretty sure that is the intent here. Anyways, what makes this story so great, this adaptation of Inferno so great, is that Maddie has agency. Oh my goodness. When her and Jean are in the astral plane and they kind of go through their history together and they realize that they have been abused by Sinister. And by the way, I've said this before endlessly on this podcast. Jean, Maddie, I hate it when people pit Jean and Maddie against each other, because both women are victims of Sinister. Jean had her genetic sample taken against her will without consent, and she was cloned. And Maddie was created just to breed with Cyclops. I mean, both these women have endured so much trauma from Mr. Sinister. And I will even dare say in the comics, Mr. Sinister even stalked Cyclops as a kid after his parents disappeared. After he was separated from his brother and he went to an orphanage, Mr. Sinister stalked Scott as a kid. And he even says it in the anime series. He goes, "From the moment you've been born, I've been watching you, studying you, and through you, I will create the future." You know, he said that in season two, "Till Death Do Us Part." It is disgusting what Sinister has done. And what we saw here is that Maddie reclaiming her agency after this trauma. She did not die. She did not get angry at Jean. That last scene with Jean and Maddie, where Jean's like, "What do I call you?" And she's here like, "Madeline Pryor." Oh my God. So beautiful. So beautiful. I love that Maddie has her own agency here. She's more than a clone. When she's holding baby Nathan, she goes, "We should have just left when we had a chance," because she knew that no matter what happens with the X-Men, there's always drama that follows. And okay, so two things I want to address here. One, I said that one of the things I loved so much about X-Men 97 is that we were seeing the Jean and Storm sisterly bond, right? And it wasn't just talking about it, it was showing us it. And that was something that's so incredibly crucial to that relationship in the comics, that Jean and Storm, they are shown being sisters, and we don't really see that in the original series. We got the line that Storm said, "She's someone I love like a sister," but we never really saw it in action. We saw it in the previous episode where Jean and Storm were talking about the baby and having to raise a baby, knowing that the baby is a mutant, is going to have to endure all of the same hardships that Scott and Jean do. And then when Storm leaves the letter for Jean and she reads out loud, but I told you, here was the best showcase of that bond. When it's made clear that Maddie is a clone and everyone is turning their back on Maddie, including Cyclops, Maddie looks at Cyclops and says, "Storm wouldn't have done this." Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful. Now, the scene that I have talked about, that I have told Latverian Lad, Sean, that if he doesn't cry at, he's a monster. I feel very strongly about it, is the ending scene where, you know, we find out that baby Cable has been infected with a techno-organic virus that's lifted right from the comics. That is 100% comics accurate. And they have to send baby Cable into the future. And so Maddie is holding baby Cable and she says to him, "You're going to feel alone." Sorry, I'm getting so emotional even thinking about it. She goes, "You're going to feel alone, but I want you to know that I've thought about you ever since you came. Ever since we found out about you, we've thought about nothing but you, your laugh, how you will sound Oh, and then she has to give the baby to Bishop, and Bishop takes him into the future. Oh man, I'm like an emotional wreck thinking about it. The line, "There are going to be days when you ask yourself, why did we do this? Was it something with me? But you are perfect, my baby. No, in our time here, we thought about you endlessly. Oh, how your voice would sound, your laughter, how you'd smile. We love you so much, Nathan. Oh, but we owe you nothing less than the best possible future." It's beautiful. So Bishop is the one who takes baby Nathan into the future. And in the comics, it was a scanning. So this is what I was talking about, that they're adapting a story for Bishop that was a story that he wasn't typically a part of. And this is it, that in place of Ascani, it's actually Bishop who takes baby Cable into the future. It's very interesting because, again, Bishop wasn't part of the original Days of Future Past story, and yet they used him in the animated series. And similarly here with Ascani and taking Cable into the future, they use Bishop. So it's littered with so much because Bishop and Cable have a very sordid history, even in the animated series where they fight each other. And it's just beautiful X-Men drama. And it's stuff that we love very much. The other thing to discuss is that Jean now has all of Maddie's memories, and Maddie has all of Jean's memories. They are one in the same, and they remember everything, including Nathan's birth. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how Jean deals with this as the episodes progress. Also, did you notice that Maddie is paler than Jean? That's a really nice callback. So when we see Jean first arrive and she's on the sofa, she's Tanner, then Maddie. It's very interesting. And of course, Sinister shows up here, and the way he tells Maddie, "You're my queen," and Maddie just transforms Sailor Moon style. I'm like, oh, I just can't. I love it so much. It was so great. You know, I did kind of question, why does she just randomly call herself the Goblin Queen? Very interesting, but it's fine. Also, like at the end, Madeline Pryor, obviously we can deduce that Pryor comes from, you know, becoming from before. Very clever. And Madeline, I believe I heard somewhere on the back end that it's a nod to Elaine Gray's maiden name, Elaine Gray being mom. But I don't know why it wouldn't have been said here, like mom and Madeline in honor of mom. But it's so beautiful. It really is absolutely so touching. We do get plenty of Easter eggs with Morph. Morph turns into Eliana and Dark Child as well. Very, again, Bo just really gave that Easter egg for us. And we also saw Spiral as well. And we'll do all those breakdowns when we have the boys, but still really enjoyed the scene where Jean's like, "I don't need my body, Beast," because this is a total homage to the Phoenix Saga, where Jean was like, "Phoenix must go," and Beast and Cyclops is like, "Jean, you're in no condition to go anywhere," and Jean is like, "Phoenix must go." We saw that here with Beast and Logan, where Jean's like, "I must go," and Logan's like, "You're no condition," and she's like, "Please, I don't need my body," and she telepathically reaches out to fight Maddie. Oh, it's so great. So many great things in this episode. Absolutely wonderful. Familia, also the Easter eggs to the cover of the Wedding of Cyclops and Phoenix, to the Dark Phoenix cover as well, of Scott holding Jean. Oh, so beautiful. So much to break down. So many Easter eggs. This could have been a two-parter. That's the only thing I would say. This could have been a two-parter. But there's a beautiful story here of trauma, of reclaiming identity after abuse, of having to let go of love and finding out what is your life after something so catastrophic. And for now, all you have, your memories may be distorted, you may have been gaslit, but what you have is a future. Oh, such a beautiful, beautiful episode. Kudos to Beau DeMaio for writing it. Absolutely stunning. The series is great so far. I think I did say something in an earlier episode where I was like, oh, people complaining about Morph, they're gonna use this episode as sort of ammunition, because I think it's pretty obvious. But when Maddie is creating, you know, their worst nightmares coming to life, Morph looks at Wolverine in the shower. So you're like, do you need a hand? And Wolverine's like, always with the jokes. I know. Everyone knows Morph. And it's like, it's alluding to Morph's sexual identity. So it's, I hope that's not something people harp on, because that was sort of the beauty of X-Men comics in the 90s, were these innuendos. This like, wait, is that character thinking that? Wait, what? You know what I mean? Kind of like with Bobby and Jean at the Barnes & Noble, where Jean is like, Bobby, I'm so happy you're shopping with me. And Bobby's like, yeah, I know guys don't really like to shop, but I like to shop, Jean, because you know, don't you? And I always read the scene as Jean being facetious, being like, Bobby, what do you mean? I've never read your mind. I think it was meant to be earnestly, but I read it with a tinge of sarcasm on Jean's end. But you get my point here. There have always been innuendos for the X-Men, and I'm upset that the people who are sort of naysayers with Morph are going to cling on to this a little bit, when it's like, it's always been part of X-Men history, but Morph is not out of the woods yet when it comes to scandals. But that's just only the one thing I wanted to address here. But my goodness, what an incredible episode. And we got Jean's origin. Oh, and we got a homage to the Art Adams cover. So excited about that. You know, the Art Adams X-Men classic cover that was also repurposed for AOA. And now we have here for X-Men 97. Oh, it's a field day of Easter eggs, Familia. It's such a wonderful episode. And I'm just glad that they went the route of the techno-organic virus of Sinister infecting baby Nathan with that. Oh, so much to love in this episode. So much crying, heartbreak. You know, we get one character that I've been dying to see in 97. And I mean, she kind of appears, but it's more Bishop's, you know, nightmare come to life. Is Shard. Oh, bring Shard back. I want a spinoff with Shard and Bishop raising baby Cable in the future and meeting the Ascani. Oh, that would be so much fun for me. But anyways, Familia, I think this is a really great episode. My only note for it is that I think there was so much in this episode inherently, just this adaptation, there was so much in this episode, I would have divided it by two. But in fairness, this episode is not including the not including the ending credits. It is about 28 minutes. And I believe the original show with not including credits is about 20 minutes. So we get 8 minutes extra. I mean, that's like half an episode from the original. So these are long episodes for animation. These are long episodes. You're gonna get bang for your buck. But and even so with that, I would have said we could have gotten an additional 8 minutes. That's the only thing I would say, is just because there was so much good here. I wanted more. I wanted to expand it. And, you know, again, I would have liked to have seen a proper Inferno unleashed on Manhattan. I mean, I think we all would have, but it just, in the context of this universe, probably wouldn't have made the most sense. And that for itself is a season-long story, and they clearly want to tell more stories. But anyways, Familia, slide into our DMs at Power of X-Men. Let us know how you felt about this episode. You know, that ending scene with Maddie and baby Cable, we spoke to Bo about it, and Bo has mentioned that this was what he envisioned his birth mother telling him, because he's adopted. Oh, there's so much heart and soul of Bo in this episode. Oh, I just love it so much. Familia, slide into our DMs. Let us know what you think. And we will be back in a couple days with a proper breakdown of this episode. We'll do it scene by scene with Ouija, Sean, and Flake.